podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
3 points clear. Hello and welcome to episode 41 of this season's Real Football Cast. As always, I'm your host, Dan Tracy, and in the next 60 minutes, we'll be dissecting all the hot topics in football. As per usual, we'll be discussing what's been going on in the Premier League over the past few days, while in addition to that, there are also some off-pitch activities that have caught our eye and they'll be getting our attention in the next hour. It's been another incredible week of football, and this week it's two up top. That means leading the line and wearing the captain's armband is Carl. So Carl, how have you been since we spoke a fortnight ago?
Yeah, really good, Dan. It was a good weekend for us, performance and result-wise. So, and another good weekend of Premier League football. So, looking forward to getting into it, mate.
Absolutely. And last but certainly not least is Fulham fan Matthew. Matthew, how have you been these past few weeks?
Yeah, I've been pretty good. Obviously, good to have the championship title wrapped up, probably later than it should have been done. And a bit of a downer to end the season on with losing 4-0 against Sheffield United on the final day. But I'm just glad to be at the championship now and back in the big time. So yeah, no complaints on my end.
Good man. Welcome back to the Premier League party. Right, before we chat all things football, I best do the social media bits. Otherwise, we'll be talking into the abyss once more. First, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. Also, the podcast has its own account, which is at Real Football Pod. And if you want to become a shareholder, all you need to do is follow and join our very elite members club, which you've now got more than 1,500 people. So well done to everyone who has followed. Talking of clubs, I'm delighted to announce we're now part of the UK's first ever sports podcast network, that being Sports Social. So check out the URL and all the links posted throughout the week on the Real Football Pod account. You can find me via iTunes by searching for Real Football Cast. If you use that platform, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like us, leave a review so we move up the league table. Also, I need to mention my content partner, that being betting.com. For all the tips and predictions you'll ever need, visit that website. And the easiest way to find all the links is by going to linktree.com/realfootballcast. Put a dot between the R and the E, you get 10 podcast platforms to choose from. It's never been easier to listen to this show. Right, it's time to go live. Where should we go first? Let's go to Anfield, because Cole, the title race and the top four race has taken an almighty twist. Obviously, ramifications for both on Merseyside on Saturday night. So will this be the most pivotal day of the season so far?
Yeah, I kind of think, wasn't it, you know, the first slip up that one team had, then, you know, the momentum fully swung in the other's favour. And it was a case of who was going to blink first. And it was one of the reasons why I actually felt confident we could go and get a result on the weekend, because I felt there had to be a slip up. Something was going to happen in that title race. And thankfully, you know, we were the team that were able to go there, stop that Liverpool machine from winning another game. And you kind of feel now that that result and Liverpool dropping some points there, and obviously City answering emphatically the day after, I think that fully puts the title momentum City's way. And you would think, obviously, you know, we might chat on it in a bit, you know, Champions League results. I think now City will just, that will be their spur to go on and just make sure they get this over the line and get the title done and ruin Liverpool's opportunity at that quadruple. But, you know, that they played well, you know, it was a great game, but they will just be disappointed, because for the possession they had, they probably could have and should have been a lot more dangerous than they actually were on the night.
Well, Matthew, when you look at Liverpool, there's no doubt that their momentum over the past few months, let alone weeks, has been nothing short of incredible. But when you're fighting on four fronts, do you reckon the game against Spurs was just one too many?
Yeah, I think it was always going to catch up to them, especially after, you know, even go back to midweek. It wasn't as if it was a stroll in the park for them. Sure. They were pretty much, you know, not on the verge, but they were in danger of being knocked out. So they would have had to put an extra, you know, extra spring their step to get out of that game, and then having to turn around and come up against a good Tottenham team. As Carl said, you felt that Tottenham were a side that could get a result. If they were playing like a Burnley or a Norwich, then you think, oh, I wouldn't be. But if you're coming up off the back of that and then off to a team against Spurs, it was always going to be hard for them. And, you know, everything's just coming together at the, you know, at the wrong time for them, because they've also got the, you know, FA Cup final to look, you know, to look forward to as well. So maybe they have one eye on, you know, a guaranteed trophy, as it were, rather than a potential trophy in the Premier League. So, yeah, it's it was always going to happen. It just happened to be, you know, this game.
So Cole, from a Tottenham point of view, they've been lauded by some for their performance, criticised by others, namely a certain Jurgen Klopp. What did you make of his comments regarding Spursy style on Merseyside?
Yeah, like it's been pointed out, isn't it? You know, how dare we go there and not try and play the way that would suit Liverpool and allow them just to open us up at will? I mean, what? How dare we? What a sort of team we are. I mean, I think he's come out, hasn't he, since and said, actually, it was probably the wrong thing to say in the heat of the moment. And I can understand that. You know, managers get microphones shoved in their face, don't they? And he was obviously frustrated. I think he probably knew, like we've just been saying, the minute one of those teams drops points, that was kind of it. And that might be the Premier League gone. So he was frustrated. But, you know, teams have got to do what you've got to do. You know, no one's going to go to Anfield and play open and expressive football against Liverpool right now, given, you know, the nature of that side and the way that they can attack and hurt you. So teams are going to go there, look to keep it tight, try and hit them on the break. You know, Spurs prefer playing sides that do that anyway. You know, we saw at City earlier in the season, you know, we don't mind teams because Liverpool or City won't adapt the way they play for us. So it allows Son and Kane to do what they can do really well. But I did think, you know, we did defend solidly. It was a good performance. One that, you know, we had, you know, plenty of opportunities after going one up where, you know, some decent crossing could have found Son open in the middle. And then obviously at the death, Højbjerg has a chance where he should really be heading that on goal. And we could have come away having actually snatched a win. I think in the context of where we are at the moment, Dan, compared to Liverpool and City, you've got to say that that was a great performance and a great result for us. And one that gives us some encouragement. But, you know, I think Jurgen was just feeling a bit frustrated because I think that night he knew the title had probably gone.
Yeah, in terms of Tottenham, I guess it's a case of it's a good point, a very good point by the end of Saturday night, but then the magnitude has slipped slightly by the time Arsenal win. However, if someone said to you, you're going to get a point at Anfield, you're not really going to say no. And I think a lot of Tottenham fans will take one point by the end of Thursday night. If it's one point in the final two matches, then obviously we made it difficult for ourselves, but it's a much better position than, say, even a week ago. So, yes, it is a good point. That shouldn't be forgotten. But another thing that shouldn't be forgotten, Matthew, is Jurgen Klopp. The example that we're just chatting about, is that another case of the mask slipping? Because there's no doubt he's an incredibly jovial character. There's no doubt about that. But that's only when Liverpool are on top. He's sometimes petulant when rarely results go against him.
He is, like, that's why I think it's a bit, not to criticise you, but you say the mask slip. He's done this on multiple occasions. I feel in the past where he said, he's complained about the way the teams play and, you know, how it affects him and how, oh, I can only manage my team. I can't complain about, or I can't control how the other team are going to set up. It is, you know, but you've got to take it with Jurgen Klopp. Because as you said, he is a jovial character. Everyone loves Jurgen Klopp when he's, you know, the passion merchant, as it was, and the way he interacts on the sideline and the way he's ingratiated himself with the, you know, with the Liverpool fans and everything. But at the same time, he can be, I just say, a little bit petulant. That probably comes with being a, you know, a serial winner and, you know, the winning mentality that he was, and he wants his things done his way so that he can win his way. So, but no, I don't think anyone would complain about having him in charge of their club. You know, if you get these little things, oh, look at him, he's complaining about that. If the trade-off is you are constantly in the talk for winning cups and winning silverware, then you would gladly take that.
Absolutely. It's a very fair swap, isn't it? You know, you put up with these rare moments of petulance if it meant being on forefront in terms of trophies. Of course, you know, why would you argue against that? But, of course, it just goes to show that there are thousands of ways to win a football match, and if you are losing the biggest prizes because you have failed to beat another team, I guess in a microcosm, in that intensity of needing a soundbite, that's what's going to happen, and that's exactly what did happen. But Cole, of course, in terms of Heung-min Song, he got Tottenham's goal on Saturday, the 20th in this Premier League season, no penalties, it must be added, which is even more impressive. The big question is, can he steal the golden boot from Mo Salah?
Yeah, you know, I don't see why not, because Salah isn't in the best of form at the moment, is he, for Liverpool? You know, and again, I don't think he had, you know, the best game at the weekend. And with the way the games we've got left, when you consider it's Burnley at home and Norwich away as well, you'd consider there's good opportunity there for getting, you know, racking some more goals up. And it's normally either Son or Kane that score our goals. So, you know, he could get, you know, one, you know, when you look at the Norwich away game, the way they ship goals, no one would say he could go and grab four or something there on the last day. I don't see why he can't get that golden boot. And ultimately, if he does, then I think that is even more impressive, because as you said earlier, Dan, you know, given the fact that the guy doesn't take penalties and hasn't got no penalties to his name for that, then it does make his goal tally, you know, just incredible this season. And it's not just this season, though, is it, Dan? You know, right. He's been doing it for the last two or three seasons where he's racking up those sort of numbers. So, yeah, he is a phenomenal player. You know, I didn't like seeing a bit at the end where Jurgen Klopp was going and hugging him and telling him that Anfield's a special place, because we've always said before, you know, Son never seems to be linked with big clubs and moves away in the summer and stuff like that. So, you know, get your hands off, because he's our property and we can't afford to lose him. But he's a phenomenal player, and those records and those numbers are just amazing. You know, I had to laugh because there were Spurs fans asking, you know, if Son's got a chance at a golden boot, do you see Harry Kane giving him penalties as well? And you just go, there's no chance that Harry Kane is giving up one single penalty at all if we get one. But Son can definitely do it. He likes scoring against Arsenal. We've got them next. And then I say, you know, he also doesn't mind scoring the odd goal against Burnley. So there's definitely a few more in him, I think, this season.
And Matthew, we've referenced Salah's relative drought in recent weeks. It's just 2 goals in 5 matches. 2 of those were against Manchester United, both in that game. Do you think the weight of his contract talks are playing on his mind somewhat?
I think it might do, and you know, not that I want to accuse him of saying, oh, you know, you got to give me a better contract, or I will, you know, not in fact go on strike, but I won't put in as much effort. But I do think when there is everything, as you say, everything that's going against him with the contract talks, and also the talk of the quadruple, maybe there is just a little bit of pressure getting to, you know, not just him, but you know, a couple of the other players. I think also just the emergence of Diaz has also sort of played, you know, whereas Mo Salah would have been the main man in getting, you know, 80% of their chances, whereas now Diaz has turned into an incredible player, so Salah's maybe getting half of their chances, and Diaz is popping in with his goals. So I think this maybe might also be just a case that Liverpool are a more rounded team, because they're a brilliant team, but just they have other options there to sort of take the load off him a little bit, so he's not maybe being relied on as more to get all the goals. But yeah, I think sort of a combination of things, you would, if you're a Liverpool fan for, you know, one reason or another, you would just be just a little bit concerned with how things are just going slightly with Salah, because he has been the talisman for the past couple of years. And if he's not on form, especially on any given day, then, you know, Liverpool can, you know, the cup final or the Champions League final, they think, oh, we might not get something out of this.
Well, Cole, on Saturday, Liverpool obviously huffed and puffed in terms of trying to get the ball into the net in the first half. Christian Romero was equal to pretty much everything they threw at him. Now, he's always good for a bookie, although he didn't actually get booked on Saturday, but that threat's always there. Is that something that you can almost take as a mitigating circumstance for the quality of his performance, that if you strip that kind of wildness out of his game, he wouldn't be as good a defender?
Yeah, he is one of them, isn't he, Dan, as you rightly say, you know, and it's like with this game coming up Thursday against Arsenal, he's one of those players you have to hope doesn't just get himself so hyped up that he goes out and just does something, you know, ludicrous within the first tackle he puts in, and next thing you know, it can kind of rock your whole game. But there was a point a few weeks back where he was on the border of, you know, one more yellow card would have seen him miss a few games, but he seems to have just, you know, reined himself back in a little bit, and he didn't pick up that yellow card till the amnesty was over. So I think there is a bit of intelligence, but as we say, yes, you can't take it out of his game. He is full blood and bluster, and he won't hold back in any tackle at all. And like I say, I think you'll see it again this Thursday. You know, I can imagine with everything surrounding this game, he is one of those that I think you probably would, as a manager, maybe just have a word and say, listen, nothing stupid tonight, though, please. You know, yes, be solid, but don't go crazy. Don't let the occasion get to you. But he's certainly been a brilliant player for us this season, given the fact as well that he had such a kind of start stop, you know, sit to the season when he came. You know, a lot of injuries. Then obviously had the COVID situation with Argentina going to Colombia and that. So he settled down really well. But obviously as well, this weekend, you know, you can't leave out Eric Dier, who had a brilliant game alongside him. And if we can just get another solid centre half and build that around those two, then we could be getting back to those days of, you know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen like centre halves.
Yes, please. But of course, Matthew, the man who will have to talk to him before Thursday and just say maybe dial it down one notch is Antonio Conte. And now, much has been made of his future at Spurs. It's kind of ongoing as to whether he'll stay or go, give him the money or I'm off, that kind of thing. Is he worth more to the club if Tottenham finish fifth and he stays than opposed to, say, Tottenham sneak fourth place and Graham Potter is the new manager next season?
No, I think you're better off with Conte in fifth person because this is still the first year of the Conte project. He hasn't had a summer window, and you know there is all, as you say, there's all this talk. Will he be backed in the summer? I think if Conte is backed in the summer, then he can, you know, with his contacts and what he's been able to do, he is the manager that can take them from fifth to fourth. You know, notwithstanding the head start, but the being dragged behind with what Nuno left him at the start of the season. So I think if Tottenham were to finish fifth and there be the agreement with, you know, with Joe Lewis and Daniel Levy that, right, we will give you the money. Obviously, you know, when pigs fly, when it comes to Tottenham, the money will be given. But I think that would be the better scenario than fourth. And as you say, Graham Potter, but, you know, another manager coming in, I think fifth and Conte would probably be the better situation. I mean, obviously, fourth and Conte would be great. Yeah. But if you had to pick one of the two, it's fifth and Conte.
Yeah, because I think if it's, say, fourth and another, you're hitting another reset button, aren't you? And you're going, here we go again, a new project, in inverted commas. I think it needs some form of stability when you consider the amount of changes we've had in terms of managers over, what, 3 years. I think, you know, Conte in fifth is, it's going to be a bitter pill to swallow if it happens. But Conte again next season with money, who knows? But who knows who's going to win the Premier League title? We think it's Man City, and especially because they thumped Newcastle 5-0. Now, we said that Saturday was a pivotal day. Sunday, just as important. I guess, Carl, unfortunately for Newcastle, they were the first team in line after Man City got knocked out by Real Madrid.
Yeah, everyone was waiting for what sort of response City would come up with, wouldn't they? You know, lots of people, I think, maybe wondered whether that result in the Champions League in the week would knock the stuffing out of them and could potentially derail the title push. But I think maybe, you know, the Liverpool result would have given them an extra spur as well the day before. And they certainly came out and emphatically answered everyone to say, listen, yeah, OK, we may have lost that game, but this title's still ours, and this maybe has given us an extra incentive to make sure we get that over the line. And ultimately, Newcastle paid the price for that. You know, there was some, you know, poor defending there, and it wasn't Newcastle's best game, but you can't blame them. You know, they've done a lot to make sure they were safe this season. And they've played some good football. You know, they're not going to be able to do it week in, week out yet. But City definitely put them to the sword. And kind of, if you like, that result does send a message now to say, right, you've slipped up, we've taken advantage, and we won't let it go now.
Well, Matthew, more than that, though, goal difference, because that 5-0 win has put City in the box seat there also. So now we're looking at a 3-point swing before Tuesday night's game at Villa Park for Villa and Liverpool. But really, that's a 4-point swing in terms of the context of the title race.
Yeah, and I think, as Carl said, I think that is probably pretty much the title, you know, signed, sealed and delivered. Because I think we've said in previous podcasts that there will come a time where Pep Guardiola will have had the Premier League wrapped up. And he can say, right, it's all guns blazing on the Champions League because he wants to win that. Well, now we've sort of got to flip and reverse it. Now the Champions League is all wrapped up. It's not going to be him. It is all focused on the Premier League. And having, you know, because there has been narrative that it was possible that Man City could end up this season winning zero trophies. I think that is something that, you know, Pep Guardiola will not want on his CV, to go a season with, you know, arguably the best team in Europe with, you know, the quality that they have, to then say, right, we didn't win a trophy this season. I don't think he'll want to let that go. So I think that is why, you know, as you said, Newcastle were, you know, just the unfortunate ones to get on the receiving end of the thumping. You imagine between now and the end of the season, you wouldn't be surprised if it's 5-0 for the remaining few games, just because Man City will be very much on the warpath.
This is it. When they do slip up in Europe, they are kind of like a wounded animal domestically. So with the City game going to script on Sunday, let's dial back to Tuesday night at the Bernabeu. Carl, I'm not sure how the Champions League scriptwriters conjure up another story, but who on earth would have seen such a remarkable Real comeback in dramatic late fashion?
Yeah, I mean, that competition really does, you know, anyone that says they don't want to watch the Champions League or anything when it gets to these sort of stages is just mad, because the games that they throw up and, you know, even the night before with Liverpool and Villarreal, you know, at halftime you're thinking, wow, you know, the turnaround is on again. It was a great game, wasn't it? You know, City, I felt Pep made a mistake with his subs, because I think, you know, once he started taking De Bruyne off and that, you did get the impression he was maybe now, all right, we'll save something back for the league fixture. And I think ultimately it possibly backfired, because, you know, it does only take one goal to change a game. And obviously Jack Grealish missed a great couple of opportunities before Real Madrid get that one back to possibly finish the game. It doesn't. And while you've got players like Benzema and that on the pitch, you've always got an opportunity of scoring. But I don't think, you know, I think everyone probably thought it's a consolation goal. You know, yeah, they've got one, but that's it. The very next attack again, they're back level. And at that point, I think, you know, a lot of people, I certainly thought, well, at that point, the momentum is now with Real Madrid. And every time they went forward, they looked like they were going to score. But it was a great night, great. You know, it's a great game of football, you know, unless you're a City fan, where you probably don't want to watch that game ever again. But for the neutral, it was brilliant. And it was just another one of those semi-finals that you'll be watching in years to come again, saying, wow, you know, who could have believed that this was coming? Great videos in the week, Dan, of the Real Madrid fans that left and trying to get back in. I mean, and that is a lesson to any fan. Don't ever leave before the final whistle in games like that, because you just don't know what can happen.
You never know indeed. Matthew, a lot has been said about scrapping away goals in Europe this season. Now, there were fears that it would diminish continental football. If anything, the Champions League has now found this extra level. Now, I don't know if that's by accident rather than design, but what have you made of no away goals in the Champions League?
I know, I think there's been some benefits to it, you know, like the, you know, like the Real Madrid game, for instance. Yeah, that game would have been. What was the score from the first leg? It's gone so far, I can't remember. What it
4-3 to Man City in the first leg.
4-3. There we go. So Real Madrid would have gone through on away goals.
Correct.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So we still would have had the dramatic moment. It just wouldn't have gone into extra time for us to sort of get it. I don't know. I still quite like the away goals, because I remember the Barcelona PSG madness from 2017. That was all because of away goals. So it's not like away goals ruined football, as it were. But I can sort of see where some people are seeing the excitement, because it means that, you know, a 4-2 win doesn't necessarily mean a 2-0 win automatically sees you through. It means you have to go that extra mile. It means you might get more football. I can sort of see the understanding of it, but at the same time, I quite liked away goals. I thought it was just a little bit of extra jeopardy, and it was a reward, as it were. You know, if the two games are level, right, who did better on the other team's turf, you know, with home field advantage and having to travel and, you know, potentially a hostile atmosphere. It sort of seemed like a good divider, but, you know, with these things, we know that it's not going to come back. You know, golden goal came and then went. Silver goal, for those of you that's a kid, that came for one tournament and then went away. So I think with away goals, I think it was there. I don't see it coming back, because we very rarely see things come back in that way in football. So I think the days of away goals have gone.
Yeah, I make you right on that front. Once they go, they go. So away goals were good. I think it's been a good season for non-away goals. But it's only been a season, so it's not really a big enough sample. But it's pointing in the right direction. It's been a very entertaining Champions League, so I guess UEFA have won on that front. But let's pivot back to England now and Brighton's stunning win over Man United. So, Carl, on the evidence of that Red Devils' performance, Erik ten Hag may just stay in Amsterdam after all, because the second half in particular was absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, it would be enough watching that to maybe make you think, get on the phone to your lawyer. And is there actually a get-out clause in there somewhere that we put in? It's not good watching, but I think it just goes back to what we've said the last couple of weeks, isn't it, Dan? Is United just want this season to be over, because the more games they play, the worse it's just going to get. You know, there's new stories every week. You know, Jesse Lingard, you know, brother coming out and, you know, slating the club. So it is just a club that just can't wait for the season to be over and hitting the reset button. They're going to have massive clear outs. We've said before, again, haven't we, you know, this is not a quick fix job. This is a long-term job. I think you have to go through the club and, you know, it's not just players, but there'll be coaching staff, you know, senior executives that might all just need to go. And it just needs a full clear out and get rid of the, you know, get rid of the deadwood, get rid of the players that don't want to be there and are not putting the effort in, and then start to try and slowly rebuild. They'll have an identity next season with the way that they're going to play. That might help them. They'll bring players in that can possibly try and play that way. So, it was a disastrous performance, but one that I think now, you know, we're not surprised at with the way the season has gone for United. I'm just amazed that Spurs managed to lose twice to that side.
Well, exactly, Matthew, because there's no logic to Manchester United this season. Even in this past week, they beat Brentford because you could argue that the top four pressure's off. The shackles have been removed, so it's a case of, OK, well, let's get the Europa League over the line and at least put a nice bow on the end of the season. However, then they go to Brighton, and you'd think, really, after beating Brentford, a similar performance would follow suit. However, that was nowhere near the case.
No, it wasn't. It's sort of weird because I didn't watch the game as it was live. I could only get the highlights over here in the US. But when I saw the result come through, I thought, oh, you know, the third and fourth goal, it must just have been a case of, oh, Man United have just given up. But it wasn't really the case. They were actually trying. You know, they were putting in decent effort. You know, they nearly got a goal back with Cavani offside. They were actually putting the effort in. It was just a case of, on the day, Brighton were just better, which, when you think about it, just doesn't make sense, especially when you think about how Man United have, you know, as you say, they've been inconsistent this season, but you would think a game against Brighton, especially, as you said, after the game against Hounslow Town, then thinking, right, we can finish on a high. Did they go and put in a performance like that? It just doesn't make sense. And as you said, I think they just want the season to end as soon as possible, just so they can hit the reset button as soon as possible.
Well, Carl, as Matthew rightly says, Brighton shouldn't be overlooked, because when a big team gets absolutely thumped, you always kind of forget that the lesser team, in inverted commas, has played really well. And Brighton were just excellent in every department. You know, they've really struggled to score goals at home this season. I think it was 12 before last Saturday. They got 4 in an afternoon, but they arguably deserved even more.
Yeah, and they are a good football inside, aren't they, Brighton? You know, the reason that, you know, Graham Potter is being touted around is because people are looking at the way Brighton play football and saying, well, wow, you know, this manager can do this with these resources. What could he do with even better resources? They're a good side. What always lets Brighton down, they always have that blip in the middle of the season, yeah, don't they? You know, they start off really well. They're up there mixing it with the European places and people start going, oh, you know, this Brighton side. Then they just, you know, because they don't have that striker who consistently can score 20 goals a season, they do just suddenly go on a mid-season blip where they lose 4 or 5 in a row and they start dropping down the table and everyone says, oh, well, that's it. Yeah, see, you know, Brighton, they can only last so long. And then they come strong again right towards the end of the season. If they could get, you know, they are only a few key players away from being a consistently good side. You know, at the weekend, they were helped in a way. You know, some of the defending is just atrocious for some of them goals from United. But they earn the right to do that with the football that they play. So if they can keep, you know, Graham Potter next season, if they can bring the right players in, find themselves a goal scorer who can sort of score consistently and, you know, get the 15 to sort of 20 in Premier League goals, they might be able to push for one of those European places. But I think the fear with Brighton is you always think, when they've got a couple of good players, they're always a big club away just from pulling those players out and they kind of have to reset again and go again. But you've got to give them credit. They've had a great run this end of this season and they've had some really good results as well.
Matthew, in terms of Manchester United, they're 6 at the moment, but 6 isn't in their hands. They are, crawling to the end of the season. We know that. The big question is, will West Ham pit them for six and push United, that being Manchester, into the Europa Conference League?
I think they could, and I've just had a look at the table. Technically, that European football at all isn't out of their hands. You know, it's not possible that they lose on the last day of the season, Wolves gone and win all three, and Man United and Man United finish off eighth.
Oh, yeah.
So it is possible Man United could be out of Europe altogether. I think it is possible, as you say, that West Ham could pip them because, you know, as we're saying with Man City, now that they don't have the Europa League to focus on, which is a bit of a shame, I think it needs to be said, after what's been a great season for them, now they can put all their focus in on the Premier League and trying to get back into the Europa League, you know, normally, as it were. And I just think, with the team that West Ham United have and the way Man United are, I don't think it's impossible that they lose on the final day of the season and West Ham, as you say, pip them into the last Europa League place, and Man United go down to the Europa Conference League, which I'm pretty sure UEFA will be rubbing their hands at the fact they've got such a big name in the Europa Conference League. But for Man United, you'd have to think, I'd just rather not be in Europe altogether than have to go through the you know, I don't want to say the embarrassment of the Conference League, but for a club the size of Manchester United, the embarrassment of the Conference League rather than, you know, than the Europa League.
Nicely saved, Matthew. But let's stay on the topic of West Ham. Cole, they went for broke in the Europa League. They put all the eggs in that basket. That's backfired. If they get seventh, is that a disappointment for them, or should any form of European football still be celebrated?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? I think For them, I think they'd probably sit there and say, given the fact they went as far as they did in the Europa League, then it wasn't surprising that they kind of put all their eggs in that basket, because essentially they were, you know, potentially three games away from, you know, Champions League football. So why would you not go for that when you know the highest you might be able to finish is fourth? So I think if they was to end up finishing seventh where they are now, I agree with Matthew. I think they'll overtake Man United anyway and finish sixth, which would again put them back in the Europa League. I still think they'd see even finishing seventh as a good season, you know, and it's been one that they just think if they can build on that and keep the sort of key players they've got this season, you know, keeping Bowen, that is going to be massive. And obviously we're yet to see what's going to happen with Declan Rice in the summer. You know, Chelsea's sort of issues with their ownership, could that be their saving grace? Because if they don't get everything sorted, you know, you assume that, you know, Chelsea might be the ones that get Rice in the summer. If there's still, you know, conflict and issues there, then they might not be able to get that deal. And where else do you see Declan Rice going? But I still think they'd say they've had a successful season because, you know, they have played some good football. They've got some good players and they did themselves massive credit getting as far as they did in the Europa League. And they were unlucky the other night.
Yeah, I think obviously seventh and a Europa League semi-final is still a very decent season for West Ham. I guess for them, it's their expectations have raised. And all of a sudden, if you're saying the Europa Conference League's an offer, then you think, oh, actually, no, it's probably not what we wanted. But I think, you know, all in all, they've had a good season. And if they finish sixth, it'll be a really solid season. By the same token, Matthew, Leicester also went for a kind of all-in Europe gamble. Another one which backfired. There's definitely a refresh needed in the summer. Does that include a new manager, or does the fact that they got to the Europa Conference League semi-final give Brendan Rodgers enough credit to start the season?
I don't know, because I think it would be a case of, because Brendan Rodgers has been linked away with a couple of times. He was linked with the Newcastle job, for instance, when the whole takeover thing was going. He said he was pretty happy, Leicester. I don't think Brendan Rodgers will leave of his own accord. I think it would have to be the owners get rid of him and say, right, you fell short of the Champions League twice in a row. This season was a bit of a chaos. You didn't, you know, go out to the Europa League, didn't make the Conference League final. It would have to be something of them saying, right, we need a new direction. I don't think he would ever leave of his own volition. But from what, again, from based on the reports around the time of the Newcastle takeover when he was linked away, I think he does have a decent relationship with the owners. So I don't see them being the ones to force him out the door, as in what I think they would probably want to keep him. Maybe give him one more year if they can get back to, you know, towards challenging for Europe once again, they might say that really do. But if it comes to, again, November, December time around the, you know, the managerial time when things get changed, then they might want to look to move on. But I don't see anything happening this summer, as it were, at least on the managerial front at Leicester.
Yeah, I think in a sense that he needs a strong start. I think the fact he's had that European semi-final just buys him a bit more time. Without that, I think he'd be on the chopping block in the next week or so. However, I think he can oversee a refresh. That might put more pressure on him, because then he's given the tools to get Leicester better. And if he doesn't deliver, then I really feel he'll be out the door. Of course, there's also the caveat for Leicester that with no European football, playing what, once a week roughly, that might give him more fresh legs and they might actually thrive next season. But let's stay on Leicester and their showing on Sunday, because it's now all change again in the relegation zone. And Cole, in the past couple of weeks, Jordan Pickford has really stood up and been counted for Everton.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that save at the end of that game with Leicester to kind of make sure Everton kept the win, well, that is no telling how big a save that could actually be. And like saying the same the week before, you know, when he gets to manage to scramble that one off the line. Leicester, I think, you know, it was always going to be the way, you know, we did the Spurs pod when Leicester were coming to us. And I sort of said, you know, the fact that their eggs were all in that Conference League basket, I kind of felt it would be hard for them in the Premier League for the rest of the season, excuse me, to kind of get themselves up for those games. And I think that's the way it's going to prove. You know, I think losing that will just have taken it out of them. I can't see them picking up many more points towards the end of the season now, because I just think they'll actually be, you know, physically and emotionally kind of shot. But great win for Everton, and one that you now start to think could guarantee, you know, could be the sort of win that gives them the survival hopes and make sure they stay up.
Well, this is it, because Everton have been, let's not be short of our words, dreadful on the road. Their home form has been something which has kept their heads above water, because their away form has been so bad. But to win away from home could be the biggest step towards safety that Frank Lampard's need, really, because, you know, they've just found an extra gear both home and away in the past couple of weeks. Not only that, Matthew, but as Carl rightly says, Leicester were always going to be there for the taking. There's no doubt about that. So even with bad away form, Everton would have been confident. But also, it was another performance by Leicester where they were just so generous in defence. And that's something that Brendan Rodgers really has to fix if he's there next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Leicester have always had, you know, decent, you know, at least under Brendan Rodgers, have always had decent, you know, decent attacking options. The likes of Youri Tielemans, who very well may be off in the summer. Vardy, Ian Acho has come on leaps and bounds since his Manchester City days, for instance. But that defence, you just always... there's just always been that little bit of, you know, whilst Kasper Schmeichel's been reliable, the defence, it isn't quite the same as what it was during the title, you know, during that title-winning season. You just think it could be better. And again, that's probably one of the main areas that is going to need to be, you know, refreshed in the summer. I think Johnny Evans, for instance, is probably coming. He's past his peak, and he's just getting the last few drops out of him. I think he's probably someone that needs to be looked at, for instance. So I think that is probably going to be the area rather that Leicester will look to address, you know, most with the highest priority, as it were, this summer.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, defence, centre back, certainly. I mean, they just can't get fit players at the moment. They've been really unlucky with injuries. That doesn't quite absolve them from what they've done all season. But I think if they're looking throughout the squads, some new fresh centre-backs would not go amiss at all. Now, that win, of course, for Everton saw Leeds plummet into the bottom three. And Cole, I think we had to add Arsenal's opener to the list of absolute gifts they've received in the past few weeks. Because you've got the Chelsea game in general, you've got the Man United game also probably in general, and then Eddie Nketiah's goal on Sunday. Now, I'm not saying conspiracy theory, but my word, the luck is on their side at the moment.
Yeah, it was sickening for us, wasn't it? You know, because that game starts and you're thinking, right, can Leeds turn up and do us a favour? And within a few minutes, that is shot. And when it's shot by the fact that a goalkeeper kind of makes a sort of blunder that was made there, you just go, oh, wow. And Leeds at this point of the season don't need a goalkeeper. You know, they've been dreadful defensively anyway. You know, the minus 35 goal difference tells you how bad they are defensively. And you don't need a goalkeeper making mistakes like that. You know, we know Bielsa would want that side to play football. We've seen it with Man City and Edison, that, you know, managers will say, no, well, I want my goalkeeper to do that. But when you're in their position, you just don't do nothing stupid, because it's all about trying to keep it safe, keep it tight. And that one goal just sets panic among the whole back four and just sets you on edge. And again, it was followed up not long after by a second, and you just kind of knew the game was over. And then we look at the red card. I'm sure we'll discuss that in a minute.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, that whole start just sets Leeds off on a bad afternoon. And you've got to say, Dan, now, given the way that Burnley and Everton have been playing, I'd be very worried if I was a Leeds supporter right now.
Well, this is it, Matthew, because although Leeds' results haven't been bad, you know, they haven't been like Watford or Norwich bad, they've been respectable under Jesse Marsh, even if they have cooled off in the last couple of weeks with defeats to Man City and Arsenal. But over their form, you'd think, OK, not too bad. Unfortunately, they haven't banked on Everton and Burnley being that even bit better.
No, I don't think they have. And yeah, Leeds, you know, we said a couple of weeks ago, I thought Leeds a couple of weeks ago were safe. Yeah. I thought the couple of results they got were... But I don't know, maybe the new manager bounce, as it were, has worn off. Maybe it's repeating what has gone on with Marcelo Bielsa, because again, Jesse Marsh's style isn't too dissimilar from what Bielsa. Maybe it's just a case of they did need a total refresh, not a Sam Allardyce style, but you know, they needed a completely different change rather than just a slight tweak and bringing in Jesse Marsh. But as you said, the Burnley and Everton results, they surely couldn't have seen coming. And I think many people thought Burnley were down, but they've given themselves a fighting chance, and Everton again have given themselves a fighting chance. And yeah, that's why you have to take the results that you have, and sort of, you can't always rely on other people to bail you out. That's why you need to get your result. And you know, gifting games away as they did against Arsenal is certainly not the way to do that.
Well, talking of bailed out, Eddie Nketiah has certainly done that for Arsenal in the past few weeks. However, Carl, yet to sign a new contract. Will he, though? Because what do you do in that situation where he's not guaranteed first-team football, overlooked for most of the season, now in the limelight, do you stick or twist?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that might be a position, you know, we've had the Jesus talk before, haven't we, of Arsenal trying to get someone in, a main striker in the summer. I guess all he can do is just do what he did at the weekend. You know, if he scores some goals, then he might be putting himself in the frame for a regular start. I don't see it, especially if Arsenal get, you know, that full spot. They'll need to go and get someone that can spearhead the front line. But I guess if you're someone like him, you sit there and think that, you know, he may be the sort of character that thinks, well, no, I can fight for my place here. This is a club that might just be about to finish in the Champions League places. So why do I want to leave at this moment? You've got a manager that likes youth and doesn't mind playing them. So I think you stick because of you know, where the club might finish and what that could lead to next season. But all you can do is do what you do. If you're then not going to get a games next season, you know, if he stayed and he doesn't start getting any regular football and Arsenal bring in, you know, a number one striker, that means you're only going to play League Cup games and the odd FA Cup game, then I think you see a player that potentially looks and asks for a loan and then potentially looks at his future, whether he's got one at the club.
Now, let's focus on the red card now. Luke Ayling was sent off. Now, obviously, Meye, from a defensive point of view, was bad. This was just reckless. Not only that, Matthew, reckless at a really key point of Leeds' season, because now that suspension will mean he misses the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of those, you have to think in that situation, because Luke Ayling is, you know, he's not a young gun in the game. He's an experienced head. You think he has to know better in that situation. I've heard, I think it was Tony Cascarino on TalkSport, saying that, you know, it was just an accident. He's done it a couple of times where you just mistime things. But even so, even to lead in with 2 feet in that situation, you are asking for trouble. You know, whilst he got a yellow card, it was always going to be overturned to a red, especially in the VAR world. But yeah, as you said, to then lose, you know, Leeds have had problems throughout the season with losing players for injuries. To lose what a player of their owner, you know, of their own volition, as it were, through a red card rather than an accidental injury, is just even worse. And it could very, and Luke Ayling is a key player for them, so that could very well be, you know, not the nail in the coffin, but it could very well be one of the key things that does send them down in the end if he's not there. Such a pivotal player isn't there for the past for the last few games of the season.
Well, I'll stay with you, Matthew, because another player the week before is injured through his own volition, that being Stuart Dallas. Now, do you think Leeds are a bit too fired up? There's nothing wrong with teams being physical and wanting to get results, obviously, but if you look at their bookings, I think it's 95 or 96 this season. I think it's the most ever in the Premier League. So are they dialed up too much? And now we're seeing the kind of after effect where Ayling out suspended the rest of the season, Dallas out injured the rest of the season. It's all starting to fall apart at Elland Road, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the a high amount of bookings probably does come with the style of play they've had, because it is high intensity. You know, the blood is pumping in a way. So there is always the chance that the bug will go to your head. And also, if you're so far out of position, then it may be that you need to, you know, drag your opposite man back to, you know, a tactical foul, as it were, for a yellow card. So I think it is, as I said, the style of play is probably catching up to them, and we are seeing the effects of it, you know, across the course of the season. And, you know, injuries you can sort of negligate over the, because, you know, some of their accidents, but the way that Leeds have been going this season, yeah, there has to be a proper reset again. Whatever division they are in, there needs to be a proper reset over the summer, because I think this season showed that the way they play cannot work long term.
Cole, I don't know if you can remember, but this Ayling sending off at this time of the season with a team in the relegation battle reminds me of Joey Barton at Anfield when Alan Shearer was Newcastle manager. He said himself to Joey Barton, "Don't get sent off, we need you for the rest of the season." He got sent off, Newcastle went down. So are we sort of seeing something in the same kind of story playing out with Luke Ayling?
Yeah, I mean, he completely lost his head, didn't he? You know, when you look at where the player was on the pitch and the fact that he was struggling to keep the ball in, so why he felt the need to go in the way he did for that tackle was just ludicrous. And it was one of those moments where you think the header's just gone, you're not thinking properly. And as we've said, losing him is the last thing Leeds want at this point of the season. Now, key defender, you're in a side that, you know, are shipping goals for fun anyway, even with you in it. So the last thing they need now is you coming out at such a crucial point of the season, given the way that Everton and Burnley have been playing. It's just another thing that kind of puts a dent in, and as, you know, as Matthew said, and another thing that maybe puts another nail in the coffin for Leeds United. They might be lucky, though. They've got Chelsea this week, and Chelsea are normally throwing games left, right and centre lately, aren't they? So, you know, they may get lucky with their game against Chelsea, but it was silly. It won't help the cause. And again, if they do end up going down, that will just be something they can look at and say, well, there's another instance where one of our players has done something that didn't help us.
Well, Cole, I'll stay with you and let's stay on the topic of damage, because Burnley find themselves dented after the weekend. Now, their impressive unbeaten run has come to an end at just the wrong time. How heavy a defeat, or how much damage is that one to Villa going to do between now and the end of the season?
I mean, it was a bad result, and they didn't play, you know, they didn't play that badly, but they didn't play that well. And defensively, they were all over the shop. You know, Villa had multiple opportunities where that could probably have even been six on the day. Villa had their shooting boots on. But I think what maybe saves Burnley is just the fact that, like I say, they've got Leeds there that are just playing worse than them. They've had a good run, so they do know that they can get results. But they've got Villa again, haven't they? You know, so that's one where you think, well, Villa have just beaten us like that. The last thing we need is them to do that to us again. They're away at Tottenham as well, so that's not going to be an easy fixture for them. And then obviously finish the season with Newcastle. So again, that is not an easy game. So I think they probably would have looked at that as points drop, because even a draw there, I think they'd have been happy with that. And again, it just kept that momentum going of them getting themselves out. I think, though, they might get lucky, and Leeds may have just helped them out this season, them and Everton. And I think they may just find they stay up just because Leeds don't get the results they need to keep themselves up.
Yeah, I think Leeds are now the wild card in all of this. What was a two-horse race is now, I guess, a three-horse battle, or whatever term you want to use, because Leeds have been sucked into the mix. And I think that Everton and Burnley are just doing enough. They're not doing enough every week, but Burnley's run has given them a huge boost after Sean Dyche's sacking. We've said, even on this show, that Burnley were done for, and they've made us look quite silly. But, you know, they're up in the ascendancy. Everton, two wins in a row. They're doing enough at the moment. Whereas Leeds, you look at them and just think, momentum isn't there. Morale is getting sapped week by week. We reference their goals against, which is awful. The amount of bookings, the disciplines going, injuries, which are self-inflicted. It's just, you know, there's all these kind of little facets which are starting to add up. And then you just can't see Leeds finding a way out of it. And I guess Chelsea at the weekend, well, it's not the weekend, is it? But when they play Chelsea next, that's going to be, well, a must win. And we'll speak about Chelsea in a moment, because Matthew, your Aston Villa prediction for top 10 looking quite strong all of a sudden. I mean, I must admit, when you said it, I nearly kind of spat my water out in my office when I'm recording. I went, well, Aston Villa. But again, you've made me look silly, because Villa are on the up and up after having a rough period, what, I don't know, even 4 or 5 weeks ago. With that said, do you reckon Stevie G rolls out the red carpet when Liverpool come to town on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think what I said in my prediction, I thought that Steven Gerrard, being the man he is and the motivator he is, and needing to finish strong, will probably get them towards the top 10, just because they need to, you know, make themselves look attractive. I think you may be right there, because while Steven Gerrard is Aston Villa manager, I think there is still that little bit of him that says that, you know, that still wants Liverpool to do well. So I'm not going to accuse anyone of match fixing, or I'm not going to put anything out there in the universe to say that he is going to do it. But you do just get the sense that there might just be that little thing from Steven Gerrard to say, you know, no 50-50s. If there's a ball to be won, just let them do it. Don't injure yourself trying to get anything. But yeah, I think, you know, I think whilst this one game might be a little bit too far for them, I do still think they will, you know, finish, you know, as strongly as they can, because they need to, as I say, finish strong to attract players for the summer. And, you know, one game aside, I reckon they still will be able to do it, with the last few games of the season left.
Now, Carl, talking of red carpets, Chelsea eventually rolled theirs out for Wolves on Saturday. The big question here is, can the Blues even get over the top four line? Surely there cannot be another collapse this late in the season.
Yeah, I think they've just got that third place theirs, because I think, you know, everyone below them is very inconsistent. And I think Spurs and Arsenal are just trying to play out for that fourth place at the moment. So I think Chelsea probably just do enough to get third over the line. But, you know, if they'd started this run of form, say, a couple of weeks earlier, then you would even be starting to think, well, actually, they really seriously will be looking over their shoulders right now and actually thinking they could miss out or even on fourth. I mean, I know Arsenal are only a point behind them at the moment, but I see Chelsea probably just doing enough to get themselves over the line. I mean, they really will be disappointed with themselves in that Wolves game, because at two up, they should have just seen that out. But, you know, it didn't tell the story of the game, because Wolves could have had, a number of goals. But Chelsea are just so open at the moment. And given the way their season's gone, that's something you would never have thought about, Chelsea being open and teams being able to get at them the way they have been. And it is something that I think might start worrying them, because, let's say, with Arsenal only being that point behind, it won't be as comfortable as it should have been for them finishing third. But I do just think they probably have enough to get that over the line. You know, they've got Leeds this week, so you probably fancy them to get a result there. Then they've got Leicester at home, and like I said, I don't see Leicester picking up any points at all till the end of the season. So I see them picking it up. And then they've got Watford at home, and let's face it, they could probably put their under eights out and beat Watford in that game. So they'll have enough to get themselves over the line, but I think they'll be really concerned with the way the season has finished for them and the form of certain players and where the club's going.
Matthew, it looks like new owners should be installed by the end of the month. It's not a given. There's still a lot of red tape to cut through, but a bid has been accepted. Does this offer at least some kind of future to Chelsea? It's not necessarily a bright future, but at least the clouds are starting to break over Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I think it does give them the chance to, you know, as you say, the dark clouds have been there for a while, because there has been a talk of, you know, there's only been some bits I've been able to get over in the States, but that there was talk, like, if the deal wasn't done at a certain time, that Chelsea might have to be kicked out of the Premier League, which, you know, whether or not that was a serious threat or whatever, you know, you always have to have it there in the back of your mind saying as a possibility. And if they can get this all done, it does give them a chance to, you know, be back in, you know, back in people's, not necessarily in people's good books, but at least they can, you know, function as a proper football club again with a sold out Stamford Bridge, and, you know, not having to go into the summer having to sell everyone just to stay alive. They can, if the new investors decide they want to invest, then they can spend at the level that Chelsea have in the past to keep things as they were. So yeah, it does offer a bit of a, you know, a bit of a bright light at the end of a tunnel after what's been, I'd say, a bit of a murky past couple of months for Chelsea with the whole Abramovich saga.
Well, of course, they're in the FA Cup final this weekend. That's something that we'll focus in next week's show. But let's focus on Watford. They're finally relegated. It was always going to be a formality. It was confirmed on Saturday. Carl, I guess the big question from this game, we could argue about Watford's bad defending again, but we've kind of done that over the past few seasons. So let's just focus on the goal and what led to it on Saturday. There was a push. Would you have given it as the referee? Because obviously, Elise pushes, I can't remember any Watford player's names, they're so interchangeable, but he pushes the Watford defender. for you, is that enough to call it back, or would you still give the penalty?
You could call it back, couldn't you? I mean, I think it's one of them. You wouldn't have been so. It could go either way, couldn't it? You could see a referee calling it back. You can see another referee letting it go. It just sums up their season, though, doesn't it, Dan? With the fact that, you know, nothing, you know, I'm not going to say nothing went for them because they're where they are because they just weren't good enough overall. But there is that thing that when things like that go against you, you do kind of look and think, well, we are just cursed because no matter what happens, we don't seem to get the rub of the green. But it was unfortunate. But for me, it's one that I could have seen it given and pulled back. But then you could say, well, yeah, I could see why it's not. And I could see why a referee would let it continue. But it did just sum up their season. I think they knew it was coming, but I think there was a lot of anger towards Roy at the end, wasn't there, with the way he acted, which I can understand. You know, it's not what you wanted to see, but they're going to have to go down, regroup again. We see where they'll end up with their 4,000th manager. You know, it'll probably be one of the ones they've had previously as well, coming back to the club. They've just got, you know, they do just need to try and find and sort out where they are going and get a plan in place, because the way that they're running that club just isn't great and it's not sustainable. And they might struggle to come back up again next season, because I can see some of those better players being picked off in the summer by the clubs coming into the Premier League.
Well, Matthew, the search for a new Watford manager begins now. John Eustace is a QPR coach and he's favourite for the job. Now, it kind of suggests a new direction because they're going for an English coach rather than, say, someone from Spain or Italy. You get the idea. Is this going to be a new direction, or is this just chucking another idea at the wall, giving them 3 months, and then we're talking about another Watford manager in, what, I don't know, September?
I think it is chucking a new idea at the wall, because as much as you want to change the manager whilst the owners are there, again, what is there in their however many years that they've owned Watford, what is there to give you think the right, oh, this is going to be what changes our mindset and our philosophy? They know what, I was going to say they know what they're doing, but they really don't. but they have their system and they stick to it. So I don't think this is going to be, oh, the John Eustace is going to be the you know, Watford's Sir Alex Ferguson sort of thing. Again, I do think it'll be a case of if they are eighth come this, you know, come October in the Championship, then you'll probably see another manager come in, just because that is the way they operate. Because I don't want to say respect to them, but it has got them back to the Premier League a number of times, and, you know, a couple of seasons where they were in the Premier League for a good stretch. So it has technically worked for them. So I don't see them changing their philosophy anytime soon.
I think they'll continue to be the laughingstock if they don't, but that's their MO, and fair play to them. But very quickly, we've got two more matches to cover, so a quick soundbite from you both for one of each. Carl, you can get Brentford versus Southampton, a 2-0 win for Brentford. Their season is ending very well, the Saints not so much.
Yeah, I think, you know, Brentford have finished really strong. We were concerned about them earlier in the season, but they've finished really strong. And Southampton, you just never know what you're getting with them at the moment, do you? So 1 week great, 1 week bad. This week was bad.
I think also with Southampton, Ralph Hasenhüttl might be another manager who needs to start well next season. New owners might just get a little bit uneasy if they're kind of 15th again. I know Premier League survival is always the first remit, but a new owner wants to see some kind of progress, and it might just be that actually it might be time for a new face. We'll have to wait and see on that front. A new face won't be coming to Norwich, but they are going down. And Matthew, on Sunday, they kind of played like a team which was just defeated. You know, usually relegated teams, they kind of find a bounce when it's too late and dig out a performance where they win, but that was nothing the case at Carrow Road on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it was, again, you know, similar to Manchester City, I think there was also the element of West Ham, you know, now that their European job is over, they need to fight for the Europa League. So Norwich were just the first team in line to say, all right, well, some, you know, we've got to get for West Ham to say, oh, we've got to fight for our Europa League place. And Norwich were just the first in line. But as you say, yeah, Norwich, they have given up the ghost. So I think, you know, despite giving themselves, you know, a decent fighting chance earlier in the season, you know, and I think the Dean Smith appointment will turn out to be a good one. I think he does put them in a decent position to get promoted next season. But I think this season was just, you know, just one season, not one season too early because it was a point early on, but just wrong place, wrong time for him in the Premier League. But I think he will come good for them in the Championship.
Actually, very quickly, Rangers, Carl. I know you have a soft spot for them. Do you want to mention their fantastic Thursday night, a Europa League final? Can they win it?
Yeah, I do have a really big soft spot for them. And it was a brilliant result and a brilliant performance. And they've been like that all season in this competition. We was all hoping for that West Ham Rangers final. Didn't materialise, but Rangers have got a real chance because the way they've played in that competition, you certainly wouldn't write them off winning it with a dramatic performance again. So, yeah, really, really, really pleased, really proud of them. And I just hope they can go on and finish that by getting that trophy over the line. But they've been a credit to Scottish football, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, the way they've played on Thursday nights has been fantastic, especially at Ibrox. The decibel limit has just been off the scale. And I think they deserve their run. They deserve their place in the final. And Eintracht Frankfurt, I know they beat West Ham, but they are still a mid-table German team. It's going to be a fascinating final, and it's all up for grabs. Right, we've hit full time, so it's time to do the admin, which is as simple as thanking my two Pod Squad members. Matthew, thanks for your time this afternoon. I hope you enjoyed that one.
Yep, absolute pleasure as always.
And Cole, thanks for wearing the captain's armband. I look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, really enjoyed that one, Dan, and looking forward to next week.
Absolutely. Right, cheers, guys, and also to the listeners out there. And with that said, it just leaves me to say that my name's Dan Tracy. This is The Real Football Cast. And until next time, goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sports Social Podcast Network.